Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Lori Fatchett McGee, and it is my privilege to serve as worship associate for today's service. I am joined this morning by the Reverend Rod Thompson, Hal Walker, our music director, and various musical guests. We are delighted to welcome you to this religious community. We light our chalice this morning in honor of all those who have served in our ministry. May the chalice be to us a symbol of the sharing of faith and hope which they have brought. May the flame remind us of the giving of their lives and love upon the altar of service and truth.
For our opening words this morning, I am using words from the Reverend William Ellery Channing, the minister who articulated our American Unitarian faith at the beginning of the 19th century. May a new life breathe through the worship in this house. May a new love join the hearts of the worshipers. May our ministry produce everlasting fruits. And on that great day when all things shall be known, may you, much loved and respected people, be our joy and crown. And may we, when all hearts shall be revealed, be seen to have sought your good with unfeigned love.
Please join me now in the spirit of prayer or meditation, as is your practice. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, it seems that when we settle into a pattern, things change far too quickly. One door opens and another closes. We rise, we eat, we sleep, we smile, we laugh, we cry. Even change itself is ever changing. And if I'm truthful, I don't like change because I desire the control. Great Spirit, will you forgive my lack of understanding that the creation of seasons is exquisite? Would you remind me that the ebb and flow of life is rippled by the gifts of love and laughter, and that life is measured by memories, not minutes? May the season of change fuel me forward towards another beautiful season of blessings on this earth that we have been given. May it be so. Amen. The days are
For my reading this morning, I'm going to share a want ad. This was read prior to the ordination of my colleague, Emily Palmer. It is somewhat dated, so don't be surprised. Minister wanted, a real challenge for the right person. Opportunity to become better acquainted with people, limitless benefits. Applicant must offer experience and know-how as office manager, politician, educator, statesman, salesman, artist, diplomat, theologian, writer, circus clown, missionary, audio engineer, traffic cop, psychologist, athlete, funeral director, wedding consultant, master of ceremonies, and teenage specialist. Must know all about problems of birth, schooling, marriage, children, diets, and death. Also conversant with latest theories and practices in economics, nuclear science, nutrition, pediatrics, space exploration, linguistics, and women's studies. Must hold firm views on every subject, but is careful not to upset people who disagree. Must smile habitually, sing softly. I follow that one. Must be forthright, but flexible. Return backbiting and gossip with professional understanding. Should have friendly disposition 24 hours a day. Must be captivating speaker and intent listener. Will pretend to enjoy hearing people talk. Education, preferably beyond PhD requirements, but also are always concealed in homespun modesty, while at the same time able to sound learned. Familiar with all literature read by congregational members, will spend at least 30 hours a week in the study, but remain available for and adaptable for sudden interruptions. Must certainly be up on current events, novels, the arts, and periodicals reading a minimum of 15 hours weekly in fields outside the ministry. Applicant's spouse must be both stunning and plain. Smartly attired, but conservative in appearance. Gracious, yet discerning. Loving, yet disciplined. Efficient yet casual and available, must be willing to work in church kitchen, teach Sunday school, sing in the choir, run coffee machine, babysit, never become discouraged, never listen to gossip, yet be fully aware of all church problems. Applicants' children must be clean-cut, all-American models, no long hair, beards, mustaches, bare feet, overalls, or puka shell necklaces. I told you it was old. Well-behaved, never sit in balcony, yet no different from other youth in the church. Tanned and handsome, but seldom at the beach unless on retreat. Present and quiet at all church services. Applicant's auto must not be new or old, adequate but not stylish. No van, camper, sports car, convertible, motorcycle permitted. home near church, and always available for gatherings, must be neither large nor small, lest others feel uneasy. Swimming pool or hot tub, questionable, since family must appear humble, slightly strained, decent, and unoffensive. Directly responsible for views and conduct of all church members and visitors. Impervious to criticism, yet teachable and transparent. Visionary, yet budget-minded. Creative, yet traditional. Defender of the faith, yet pleasant and positive. All replies kept confidential. Anyone applying must undergo full battery of exams to determine sanity. This is a sermon about being open to new ministry. For the visitors amongst us, I am a longtime member of this congregation, a retired Unitarian Universalist minister, and am on the ministerial search committee tasked with finding the next settled minister. The search committee has started its work, but how about you? As you consider our new ministry and the new minister, what are your expectations for that new minister? I hope you're more realistic than the people who wrote that want ad. What are your expressed expectations of your new minister? I know you have them. They are the ones that we'll gather to share with potential ministers. Your search committee has already started to gather them, and we'll share those with you before we share them with the rest of the world. But this morning, I'm more concerned about the unwritten expectations, the ones you've got in the back of your mind. Like, you may expect your new minister to be exactly like your favorite minister, or you may expect them to be the opposite of your last and least favorite minister. Or you may expect your new minister to make your neighbors sit up and take notice, or not to remind your neighbors of how different you are from them. Or you may expect your new minister to be your best friend, or to be the person who makes you do the right thing, or to preach the best sermons you've ever heard every Sunday. You probably expect him or her to always be available and to be all things to all people. In short, you expect the new minister to do everything but walk on water and be working on that. I hope you know how unrealistic that is. If not, you won't be the only ones. Consider this ministerial profile and plan from the search committee in the newsletter of the UU Church of Central Nassau. The surveys are all in on the basis of careful analysis or computer-aided tabulations. The search committee has developed a profile of the minister most likely to suit the needs of our congregation. Accordingly, we submit this profile and the related plan for your review and comment prior to the final printing for inclusion in the packet. The ideal minister preaches exactly 10 minutes. He condemns evil, but never hurts anyone's feelings. She works from 8 a.m. until midnight and is also the church janitor. The ideal candidate makes $40 a week, wears good clothes, drives a good car, and donates $30 a week to the church. She is 20 years old, and he has 40 years of experience in the ministry. He makes 15 house calls a day and is always in the office. We are not certain we will be able to find a minister who exactly fits our profile. Therefore, we have, after considerable discussion, developed the following backup plan. We will, following the usual search process, find the best minister we can and give him or her a year to become perfect. If he or she does not do so within that time, we are going to mail his profile to 6 congregations that are also dissatisfied with their ministers, then bundle up ours and send him or her to the first of those 6 churches. According to our computer calculations, if we play our cards right, in 1 week, we should receive 1,643 ministers in return. A computer-aided simulation indicates that one of them should be perfect. A word of caution. If we adopt this strategy, it is necessary for us to follow it to the letter. We understand that one church in a neighboring district broke the chain and got their old minister back in 3 months. I know, it could be worse. Instead of wishful thinking, let's think about your next minister and what your expectations of that minister could be, or maybe should be. Maybe we need to start by looking at what a minister does. There are four traditional roles, and they all begin with a P: preacher, pastor, priest, or prophet. First, the preacher, who spreads the good news inside and out, inspires and challenges, offers spiritual guidance, comforts the afflicted, and afflicts the comfortable. Is a champion of Unitarian Universalism, shares insights, and shares themselves and their personal experiences. I hope you know that what makes a good preacher is not exactly the preacher's responsibility, though reading and writing skills and a gift for language are helpful. It's the reception that the preacher gets, how well what the preacher says resonates with the listener, where they live, that really makes a successful preacher. And the preacher has very little control over that. That's your job as the listener. Responsive listeners create the best preachers. I have an example. A colleague of mine was delighted to, after graduating from seminary, to be called to a church there in that same community, so they could take advantage of the wonderful library at the seminary and still have friends that they could call on or have lunch with, etc. After a month or so, even shorter time than that, he realized, or she realized, I'm going to change the gender here, she realized that it was likely that those seminary professors lived in that town also and might show up in her congregation. And sure enough, one Sunday, the homiletics professor, that's the one who teaches preaching, sat in the back row of the church. This happened to be one of those Sundays when preparation for her sermon had not gone well. all weekend there were meetings and events that she had to go to, but Sunday morning arrived and the sermon had to be preached as she had it, so she did. One thing that she had learned to share with her congregation that I will share with you, and that is, in a response, when you don't know what to say to the minister after the service, you just say, "Thank you." Anyway, after the service, she went to the back of the congregation and was greeting folks, many of whom said, "Thank you." But she noticed that the professor was hanging back, wanting to be the last person to come out. Finally, the others had gone, and the professor came, took her hand, and said, "Thank you for that." And she immediately launched into how terrible the preparation had been, and she was so sorry that the sermon wasn't up to par. And finally, he almost had to put his hand in her mouth to get her to shut up. And then he said, "Not the sermon you preached. The one I heard was just what I needed today. Thank you for that." Responsive listeners create the best preachers. Whether it's the minister, the interim minister, or someone else preaching up here, responsible and responsive listeners create the best preachers. The second P is pastor. Bringing comfort, bringing a comforting presence. One to sit with, to be with, to hold your hand, to counsel, to give a hug. Of course, as the church grows, that's harder to do. Again, the minister may have all the skills and years of experience, but is not a pastor until someone trusts enough to welcome him or her into their tragedies and triumphs. That's your responsibility as the recipient of pastoral care, for opening, open, caring people create the best pastors. I have another example. When I was in seminary, we all, because we had no classes on Monday, we went to our student churches on Friday and spent the weekend with the churches, meetings and counseling and all the rest of the things that we were learning in the seminary. This particular colleague went to the same church and stayed with the same family for 3 years, which was remarkable. I can't remember how many churches I served during my anyway. He had a great time, did good work, bonded with that family. They became kind of a second home for him. On his last weekend, on Saturday night, as he was beginning to think about the service he would perform the next day, a knock at the door, and one of the parishioners came in asking for the pastor. His family had just experienced the death of a teenager in an automobile accident, and the family would like the pastor to come and help them. This was the first time he'd had that kind of an opportunity, and it scared him to death. But he let the person go, so he had a couple of blocks to walk and to think about all of those things that he'd learned in seminary so that he could try to share them with this family. He went in the home, and there sitting around the old parlor was the whole family. And he tried to share and comfort them in their loss. Somehow he got through that. He got through the service the next morning, the funeral that afternoon, said goodbye, since this was his last day there, and went back. That experience, because he walked away, drove away, he felt so disappointed in himself that he had not been able to do what they needed. And so he devoted his rest of his career with trying to be the best pastor he could possibly be. Some years later, the congregation was celebrating a 100-year anniversary, maybe a 150-year anniversary, and he was invited back since he had become a star amongst his denomination, come back to do the service for their weekend celebration. And the family that he had stayed with invited him to come and stay the weekend with them, which it was wonderful for him. They had a great time renewing acquaintances and catching up on each other's lives. Late on Saturday night, before he went to bed, he shared with them what he had worried about since he had left. And that was how poorly he had counseled, comforted that family. And he just kept talking about it and talking about it until the family finally got him to shut up and said, "That family is still talking about how comforting you had been and how much you helped them to deal with their loss." Responsive and open, caring people create the best pastors. The third of our P's is priest. The one who does the weddings, the memorial services, the funerals, child dedications, rituals of all kinds. For many of us, this is the hardest but the most rewarding role that we play. I, for one, have always lived in fear of using the wrong name or pronouncing it wrong at a wedding or a memorial service, and is one reason why I let Lori do the yellow cards. Everyone's emotions on those occasions are so high. Nerve endings are so raw. But perhaps because of that, moments of something like grace happen. I remember one prime example. It was in a church that I was serving. A young woman had been killed in a bicycle accident, and her friend, who was part of our pagan group, came to me and asked me to do the memorial service and to have it in the church. And so she and I put together what we thought would be a comforting service for the people who were going to come. And one of the things we decided that we wanted to do was to give everyone who had come an opportunity to share something about the young woman who died. So we decided to grab the idea from Christmas Eve, where you get a candle, the ones with the little drip protectors on them. So we gave everybody who came in one of those little candles, and we went through the service, and she was on one side of the table and I was on the other side. We had our chalice, of course, out, and we asked everybody to light their candles from the chalice and speak about the woman. We had turkey roasters, you know, the ones you get at the grocery store, filled with sand. We had four or five of them on the table between the microphones. And it was amazing how many people had come to this service, and they all enjoyed so much sharing, and people were just enjoying the whole thing. And it was almost over. I mean, as much as you can enjoy a memorial service. The woman who I had worked with was at the microphone on the other side and was just about to share her remembrance of her friend when the candles that had been put in first had burned down enough to start burning the cardboard drip protectors. And all of a sudden, we had a big fire. She and I both ran to the kitchen, which fortunately was right next door, grabbed pitchers of water and came out and put the fire out. And I'm thinking, oh, we've ruined the whole thing. And she went back to her microphone, and she stood there for a minute, and then all of a sudden I saw her shoulders going up and down, and I'm thinking, oh, she's weeping. And then she started to laugh. And she said, she would have loved this. For a minister to succeed in his or her priestly functions, you have to be encouraging of them and ready to the experience of grace when it happens. That's your responsibility in being open to new ministry, to be encouraging and ready for that experience of grace. The fourth P is the prophet. Those who challenge, lead in social justice work, cajole, affect the comfortable, speak the truth in love. Some ministers take on this responsibility by stepping out in front, as many of your ministers have done. Others tend to work from behind, taking on a cheerleader role. Always in the back of your mind, a minister remembers that a prophet is seldom honored in their own country. That's biblical, by the way. So even when you disagree with your minister in his or her prophetic role, remember she or he is only doing the job you've called them to do. Your responsibility in being open to new ministry is to join in these efforts to create a just and compassionate society. Some would say that there is a fifth P, the politician, whose job it is to get things done, to affect the institution, to provide strong leadership, move the system. Politicians are not our favorite people. But we expect our ministers to be able to keep a balance between being out front, open and honest and personal, and still do what is often best done from behind the scenes by someone with a larger picture. Your responsibility in being open to new ministry is to be supportive of your minister when he or she proposes changes for the benefit of the congregation. That's part of why you called them. We ministers try to remember what my father used to remind me of. It's amazing how much you can get done if you don't have to be given the credit for it. So your responsibility in being open to new ministry is to be responsible listeners, to be caring people, to be encouraging and ready for that experience of grace, to join in those efforts to create a more just and compassionate society, and to be supportive. And your responsibility to be is to be committed to staying at the table, even when the decisions are hard to make and even harder to achieve. And we expect a minister to do all this in 4 hours on Sunday morning. Thank you. Of course, you all know that that's not true. It is true, as Gordon McKeeman, one of my mentors, used to say, being a minister means a life of being pursued by Sundays. That's true, but most of a minister's work happens on the other days of the week. That's one of the reasons why you'll find them in the office most weekdays. Actually, ministry is a job that's never done. There's always more to do. Ministers may be the last of the generalists. No wonder we burn out ministers almost as fast as we make them. Anyway, that's what you need to expect of yourselves in being open to new ministry. So what can you expect of a new minister? They will be an imperfect human being who is very good at doing some things, okay at doing most things, challenged by a few things. So we ministers need to recruit help for those. Because of your size, or our size, and our likely fair compensation, I hope you'll attract an experienced minister. But you may be getting someone who is fairly new to professional ministry. Even so, they're not brand new. They've been to seminary, done field work in a church setting, and learned by doing as in an internship. And since most are second or third career folks, they come with lots of life experiences. One thing you can count on, you'll be getting a real person with real expertise, eager to lead, eager to love, and to be loved. Just so, I would give you this advice, which I think is part of my job. Look for a good enough minister. Don't look for a ministerial star, for even stars have their weaknesses. I don't know how many of you know of A. Powell Davies. He was the minister of our All Souls Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C. in the 40s and 50s. He was such a remarkable preacher that his sermons were reprinted in the Washington Post on Mondays. He ran out of room in his congregation, in his church, for all the people who wanted to come and be part of his congregation. So he helped start churches all around the Beltway in Washington. I was happy to serve one of those in Maryland that started at the University of Maryland, and they were listening posts, listening to his sermons and his service, sitting in the University of Maryland, in my case, originally. Unfortunate, or maybe fortunate, he was a great preacher, a great organizer, but he was not a pastor. They hired an assistant to do the pastoral care. So everyone in the congregation knew, even those listening, that the only time he went on a pastoral call was when one of his board members was in the hospital dying. Usually, the assistant did all of the pastoral stuff, but there was one occasion when he had several people in one hospital and there was a board member dying in another one. And there was also a man who had broken his leg in that same hospital with the dying man. And he asked Davies if he would please visit the guy in the with the broken leg while he was at the hospital, because the other guy, I didn't have time to go there. And finally, he agreed to do so. He went and did his pastoral call with the board member, and then he went to the room of the man with the broken leg. Now, think back to the 50s. Here is the broken leg sticking up, white sheets. Davies walks in the door. The man in the bed gets as white as the sheet, which he's pulled up, and said, "What haven't they told me?" So don't look for a star. Ministerial stars, like all stars, are on their way up and out. Their focus is remote in a galaxy far, far away. A good enough minister is happy to stay here for a long time. A good enough minister is happy to minister here. My advice is look for a good enough minister. I think of Gordon McKeeman, of whom I referred earlier. He was the minister of our Akron church for over 20 years, then president of Star King School for the Ministry. Though many would call him a star, I think of him as just such a minister, a good enough minister. Likewise, Peter Lee Scott, whose words were read as the chalice lighting. He's a fellow alum of Lexington Theological Seminary, retired colleague, served congregations in New York, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Wisconsin, New York. He too was a good enough minister. So I say, I hope we will find a good enough minister. So be it. Blessed be, and amen. I'd like to close with a meditation from another good enough minister, Richard Venus, who was minister of the First Universalist Church in New Madison, Ohio. Been there since 2005. After serving in Dayton and in Michigan. He writes, "What is it that we ministers do, really? I mean, who do we think we are? What do we do that makes us ministers? We read and meet and flush and talk and sing and aerobicize, fight, dance, mow the grass, find partners, eat lunch, pray, make love, think, play, ask questions, marry, bury, are puzzled, get up early, divorce, we write, take risks, get up late, paint, jog, beg, cajole, buy, spend, save. Who are we? Sometimes we are more than we would be otherwise. Sometimes we reach into our deepest selves and speak from the heart. Sometimes we hold a hand or stand beside. We cry with, we laugh with, we mourn with, we speak with, we listen with, we argue with, we wonder with. We are the hand holders, the side-by-siders. We are the do-withers, the be-withers, the there-withers, the take-time-withers. That is what we do. That is what we do, really. When the time is right, may we find just such a good enough minister. So be it. Blessed be, and amen. Please repeat after me. It is good.
It is good.
It is good to be.
It is good to be.
It is good to be here.
It is good to be here.
It is good to be here together.
It is good to be here together.
It is good to be here together now. So be it, blessed be, and amen.